Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Wednesday, January the 5th. Happy New Year. And tonight we're going to get 2022 underway, the Texas politics segment of our show underway with our good friend George Rodriguez from South Texas. We're going to get back on the swing of things, or as they like to say in Texas, get back on the saddle and talk a little politics 2022. We're going to look at some of the things that may be happening in 2022. There are some very exciting primaries coming up. And obviously, the districts are going to be a little bit different. So there's going to be some challenges to both Democrats and Republicans. And then the other big story we're going to get into with George tonight is that Texas keeps winning in the courts. I mean, if you look at the list of victories that Texas has had in the courts, it's rather remarkable, really, when you look at the overall record. I heard today that it was like 17 out of 19 cases that Texas has won in the court over the last couple of years. So let me say Happy New Year to George. How are you, George?
Real good, thank you. How are you?
Absolutely great. How did you spend New Year's night down in San Antonio?
I spent it very, very quietly. I've learned from past experiences that as it gets closer to midnight, there's a lot more drunk drivers. So I try to get home and stay safe.
Yes. Now, here in Texas, we did have, it was a muted celebration because obviously, they didn't have the same crowds as in years before. But there were a lot of lights and fireworks. Did you have something like that too?
Yeah, they did. There was a large party downtown, and there were fireworks in surrounding communities. But there was a huge fireworks display downtown, so it was pretty good.
What about
it?
Your
was active.
Christmas
it was
time?
Not like last year when everything was kind of muted and somber.
Yeah. Right. What about your Christmas? Did you have a lot of tamales, George?
Oh my gosh! As usual, I gained weight over the week, over the holiday, but I'm working it off.
Who doesn't? Who doesn't, George? You have to be. You have to be inhuman not to gain weight. I mean, with all of those wonderful tamales down in San Antonio. Well, I want to begin our show today, January the 5th, by going back in history just slightly a little bit. On this day in 1920, George, the Red Sox sold Babe Ruth to the Yankees. A lot of people don't know that Babe Ruth was originally a Red Sox. A member of the Red Sox, and they sold him to the Yankees in 1920, and that created the so-called Curse of the Bambino, which went on for 86 years. From 1920 to 2004, the Red Sox did not win the World Series, even though they played in a few. And it wasn't just the fact that they didn't win, George. It was all the tragic losses that they had. It was almost like, it was just a tragedy, the Red Sox. They broke their fans' hearts often, over and over and over again. But finally, they won in 2004, and the curse of the Bambino was finally erased, George.
Yes, I remember every time that there would be that the Red Sox were involved in a World Series, there was always talk about the curse. My father used to talk about the curse himself. And it was quite real to people. It was quite real. And, it certainly seemed to linger until recently.
Right. Well, it went on for a while, whether the curse was real or not. The curse succeeded in keeping the Red Sox from ever winning again. So quite a story, the curse of the Bambino. Well, George, this week, tomorrow, Thursday, is the first anniversary of January 6th, and I'm sure that we will hear about the insurrection, the day that democracy died, the day that the government was overthrown or there was an attempt to overthrow the government. I'm not defending anything that happened on that day. I think it was very stupid. A lot of the things that were done that day were completely unnecessary and stupid. There's no reason to do it, no reason to rush like that into the building. So I'm not defending any of the people who did anything, George. I thought they were very silly and very stupid. But I have to tell you, George, that Capitol was not defended, was not protected. And that, to me, has always been the big story. That it's almost like nobody wants to talk about that, George.
Well, it seems to be, once again, an effort by Democrats to portray Trump as trying to overthrow the government somehow, that there was a plot, a coup attempt. And, ultimately, it was just a bunch of rowdy people that didn't know how to control their emotions and who gave the conservative movement a very bad name. And it resulted in injuries and in a death, a real tragedy. But there is no there. There was no plot. And the more they keep talking about it, the more they keep insisting there is. It's a replay of the dossier once again. People who hate Trump to the point that they see the boogeyman everywhere he goes. This is the same thing, and it's not getting any traction because people are concerned about real things. Every time you fill up the tank, you are concerned about something real rather than something that the boogeyman that they are trying to portray up in D.C.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think most people tomorrow I hear an echo there. Is that from your side, George, or?
No, not me.
Oh, okay, all right, hold on for a second. I hear an echo. I don't know what in the world is going on.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here. Do you hear an echo now?
No, not at all.
No, I don't hear. Okay, great. I think we just... there was a button that I forgot to push, so I think we're okay now. So sorry about that. But anyway, we're okay right now. No echo. But anyway, going back to your point, you were saying there was nothing there. There's nothing there. And I think that's the bottom line. There's nothing there. What we had was a bunch of people who got out of control, and had there been the slightest protection of the Capitol, this would have never happened because they would have been dealt with immediately. Had there been, we just learned, by the way, from President Trump in that history tour that he took with Bill O'Reilly, those shows that they were doing, we learned from President Trump, and it has been confirmed, that he had told the Secretary of Defense, look, I think we need to have about 10,000 troops around the Capitol that day, just to show a force that, the Capitol was going to be protected. And that was actually turned down, George, by the mayor of Washington, D.C., and whoever else turned it down. So President Trump was willing to defend the Capitol, as is his job, but he couldn't override the mayor of Washington, D.C., because that lady had the last word. But if there had been 10,000 troops around the Capitol, nothing would have happened, George. I mean, the people who... let's say the unruly people would have been stopped immediately, George.
Yeah, but again, Silvio, when you talk about reality and you talk about, the narrative that these folks want to portray and talk about, it just doesn't connect. I mean, you will never hear on CNN or MSNBC report that, you know, she was the one that turned it down. You're not going to hear that. And that's the sad situation that we've got, is that so many people are dependent on the issue of the of the media, to the point that if they don't say it, then it's not going to happen.
Right.
Or it didn't happen.
That's right. Well, there's no question about it. No question about it that had there been any kind of any kind of, I think we got an echo back there again, but I think I just took care of it again. Sorry about that, George. I just took care of the echo of the, it seemed like it came back for a minute there, but it went away. But I think what amazes me is that here we are a year later, nobody has actually been charged. No one that day has been charged with treason, with insurrection, with sedition. A lot of people, yes, a lot of people are going to go to jail for property damage and trespassing, and that's okay with me, George. But nobody has been actually put in jail for sedition, insurrection, or treason. But yet, if you watch the media or if you listen to the media, it's all about the insurrection. And I think, you know, my sense, George, is that if the media wants to understand why people are tuning them out, maybe they should listen to the way they cover these events, George.
That's exactly right, but they don't seem to care. They seem to think, you know, it was portrayed very, very nicely by a friend of mine who I spoke to during the Christmas holidays, who was on my show, that that they see themselves as the high priests of the new morality, of the new religion, which is secular in government. And they see themselves as the high priests. They are the prophets. They are the folks who determine what you know, how you should act and what you should say. And to correct them is heresy. And we cannot correct them because you certainly cannot go against, you know, the priests. It is really outrageous the way that things have developed with these people. And I don't see them getting off of that high horse. I just don't see them having a reality check.
No, the only way they're going to get off the high horse is if we kick them out. If we kick them off the high horse in November,
that's it.
That's the only way. And now the other good news,
well,
though,
even
is
then, even if there are massive, and I mean massive, victories across the board for conservatives and Republicans, you will still see the media attacking and declaring that it's, you know, either that people were denied the opportunity to vote, or that it was mistaken, or that the people that have taken over, it's part of the coup. I mean, it is really, really a sad situation we're looking at. We can't win with these folks.
No, you can't. And really, as I say, the best you can do is take them out of power, take them out of the majority, and at least as the minority, they don't have the same ability to wreck everything like they're doing right now in Washington. But I wrote a post about this over at the American Thinker today, and I said that the best thing you can do tomorrow is go out for a walk and turn off the TV, because they're going to have a one-day – this is going to be a one-day orgy on the news for January the 6th. But I think it's going to fade away very quickly, George, on the next day when people put gasoline in their cars, when they take a look at the mess and down in the border, and when they look at the overall situation of the country. I think those issues are far more important to them, of course, than what is happening or this, you know, like I said, an orgy of coverage regarding January the 6th. We're going to take a little break with our friend George here and come back. We got a lot of Texas politics coming up in our next segment. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Let me just quickly apologize to the audience and to George for some of the technical mishaps there we had in the first segment. We're trying out a new system, and I think obviously I didn't have all my buttons down, but I think we got it now, George. So I don't think we'll hear from our friend Echo ever again in 2022. How is that for a promise, George? No more Mr. Echo in 22. That sounds great. You're right. It does sound great. I was freaking out, you know, hearing Mr. Echo, but I know what happened. You know, you have a new system and not all the buttons are always turned on like they should be. Well, let's talk a little bit about Texas politics, George, because I want to do a sort of go back and then look forward type thing. So let's go back for a second. I think 2021 and maybe part of 2020, but mostly 2021, was an amazing year for Texas versus the Biden administration in the courts. When you think of all the times that Texas challenged the Biden administration, whether it was deportations right off the bat, whether it was remain in Mexico, whether it was the mandates here more recently. And of course, I think the biggest one, abortion. I mean, I heard something like we're 17 out of 19 or something like that in these battles with the Biden administration. And I think that's good for not just because it's Texas, George, but because it reinforces the idea that, number one, the states have rights and that the federal government has limits, George.
That seems to be the bottom line to the aggravation that the left sees with the Constitution. They want a government that is run by a small group of people in New York and in Washington and in California. And, they seem to think that everyone it lives on plantations or on fiefdoms, and so therefore all the states have got to be exactly the same in their laws, and they don't understand, the idea of states' rights, nor do they care to. They want Texas to do the same things that the state of California and the state of New York does. And if the state of Texas does not do it, well, then they've got to figure out some way to force it. And, as long as you've got the Constitution, as it is written, it is a book of rules, a set of rules that the government has got to follow, and they continually will lose. How much longer this will stay that way, and how much longer, because the Democrats are insisting that they've got to expand the Supreme Court to fit their needs, that they've got to they've got to figure out a way how to amend the Constitution so that it fits their agenda and their needs. I'm hoping that they are never successful on it, because if you're not happy with Texas and its abortion law, you can always go to California or New York. Nothing is stopping you from that. You can always go there, and you can, get whatever assistance you want, and whatever you wish.
They
don't want it that way. They want it here. They want it now, and they want it for everybody.
Right. In fact, there was I read something right before the end of the year that there were actually agencies, tourist agencies, in California, who are offering you a trip to go to California to get an abortion or something from Texas, which is pretty bizarre, but something like that was going on. But it seems to me that you can look at these mandates. For example, the abortion mandate is or the abortion ruling, or the lack of a ruling, I guess, on the part of the court leaving the abortion law the way it is. That to me is nothing more than the Supreme Court allowing the people of Texas to express their wishes with respect to abortion through their legislature. They're simply saying, hey, you in Texas have the right to do this. We're not going to tell you what to do. If you want to limit abortion, you can do it. It's within your rights. Now, some of the other battles that we won, whether it's mandates, whether it's remain in Mexico, or whether it's deportations. What I see there, George, is a court basically telling the Biden administration, you cannot govern this way. You cannot govern by writing executive orders. If you want to do a mandate, then you need to go to Congress and try to pass a law through Congress that you can sign about mandates, but don't do it by executive order. And it's the same with deportations and remain in Mexico, George.
I agree. I mean, it is a situation where, again, they want to impose their, and that's the word that I will use, they want to impose their agenda at the expense of the rules dictated by the Constitution. You can't do that. I mean, that's like a football team saying, okay, we want a first down, even though we got only five yards on that one. We're still gonna we want a first down. Well, you can't do that. You can't do that. And if you're going to do it, then you have to change the rules, which is what they're trying to do, ultimately.
Right.
But
right.
You know, you just cannot ignore it. You just cannot ignore it, and this is why they keep losing.
That's right, and that's exactly right. They're trying to do it by going around the constitutional process. I mean, people can have an honest debate about mandates, for example. But if you're going to do mandates, it should come from Congress. The Congress should pass a law, and that's the way we should do it, not through these executive orders. But I think, let me ask you a question. This sort of ties into 2022. Do you think that all these victories in the courts are going to end up helping the Attorney General Paxton in his primary? He's got a tough primary coming up. Maybe not so tough, I don't know, but he does have a lot of people with money running against him. Do you think that these battles are going to help the Attorney General, George?
I can't see how they can hurt him. I really don't. I think that they are going to carry a lot of weight with folks, and people will understand or see the positives that he's done. I mean, he's going to propose them, he's going to put them out there, and I don't think that they can be ignored.
Right.
I think that those are big victories for him, and he is. You know, he's going to play them up, and I don't blame him for it.
Right, and the other people running against him, whether it's George P. Bush or Eva Guzman, and I think there's somebody else running, the congressman. Those three are not going to run against the attorney general on any of these rulings. I mean, they're basically going to say the attorney general was right in winning these battles. So that sort of takes away a little bit from their campaign. I mean, the attorney general is going to have these things going for him, and the three opponents are not exactly going to say, you know, the attorney general was wrong in going after the federal government, George.
Well, what I've heard is that the criticism that they're going to have is that he didn't do enough. You know, so that remains to be seen as to how that takes, you know, how much that takes. Effect, you know, that argument takes effect, but
yeah.
That's what I've heard, that they're going to argue that it's not enough.
Yeah, what they're going to say is he should have done more, but honestly, in all fairness here to everybody, it's not really, there's only so much. I mean, he can make the case and go to the courts, and all he can do is win or lose, and the speed that he can do these things is completely in the hands of the judges. I mean, if we present the case, let's say today, the judges are going to take their time. So I mean, I think this is going to help the attorney general. I really do. I feel that it will. Now, let's talk a little bit about the governor's race. There's a very interesting primary there too. At least here in the Texas, in the Dallas area, we're getting a lot of publicity from Mr. Huffines. You know, everywhere you go, there's a placard of Mr. Huffines, and when you turn on the radio or TV, there's a lot of ads for Mr. Huffines. But I still don't see a scenario, George. I could be wrong. Please tell me if I'm right or wrong. But I don't. I really don't see a scenario where these two candidates, Roy West or Mr. Huffines, keep the governor under 50%. I still think the governor is going to make it past 50 and get through the first round, George.
Well, you know, again, it remains to be seen. I mean, at the grassroots level, I see a lot of enthusiasm for both Alan West and for Don Huffines. I mean, I just see a lot of enthusiasm at the grassroots level for them. Whether that translates into voters turning out remains to be seen. I think, again, it's going to be it's always difficult to beat an incumbent, and it's going to be very, very difficult to beat the governor, because he's got the media on his side, he's got the money on his side, he's got the podium. It's just an uphill battle for them.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think you're right. I mean, even if he were to, even if there was a runoff, I still think the governor would win rather easily. But I guess the governor would rather win it the first time so that he can then focus on Beto O'Rourke, who I assume is going to win the Democrat nomination. But one last thing here, George. Are you as surprised as I am, or maybe I'm not getting all the information, but are you as surprised as I am of how silent Beto O'Rourke has been since he declared his candidacy? I mean, it's almost like nobody knows where this guy is. And at first they came out and they said they had, you know, $2 million they had collected, and it seems like they haven't said anything since. And that's, George, I think that's over a month ago. Now, granted, the holidays were in the middle. You know, you got Thanksgiving, Christmas. You know, maybe they weren't doing a lot of campaigning. But it sure seems to me that Beto O'Rourke has gone silent here, George, for quite some time. Am I wrong? Do you get the same feeling?
Geez. I don't know if he's strategizing. I don't know what the heck he's doing. But he's being awfully quiet. You know, I think... maybe he's having second thoughts. I don't know. But he is being very quiet.
Well, the very latest number that I saw came out right before Christmas, had the governor up by 15, 52-37. And if you look at the other polls that have come out before that, Beto O'Rourke was always in the mid-40s. So, you know, let me rephrase it. He was always between like 38 and 45. So he's having a difficult time cracking the high 40s. I mean, he seems to be stuck under 45. Whether that's going to continue, I don't know. A lot of things can change. But when your campaign is down to praying that we have another week without electricity, you know you're in trouble, George.
Yeah, true. It's really true. I just don't think that you know, the issues that Democrats are proposing and pushing, I just don't think that they're going to get traction. I mean, everything from an open border to defund the police to expanding, getting bigger government, being pro-abortion. I just don't see how those are going to take any kind of have any kind of traction in Texas. I really don't.
Well, especially in a year when, by all accounts, you're going to have a red wave. How big of a wave is the question mark? But there is going to be a red wave. So if there is going to be a red wave, whether it's a big wave, whether it's a medium wave, I mean, that's probably not the kind of year that you want to be a liberal running in Texas. The last time around in 2018, when Beto O'Rourke ran for the U.S. Senate, he had everything going his way, including $80 million that came into Texas to defeat Senator Cruz. I don't think he's going to come anywhere near that, George, in collecting money, because I think at some point in the spring or in the early summer, a lot of the big pockets in the Democrat Party are going to say, you know what, investing money in Texas is a waste of time. We got to go somewhere else because we got to save the Senate. You know, there's an election in Arizona. There's an election in New Mexico where the incumbent Democrat senator is in real trouble. There's an election in Georgia where the incumbent is in trouble. So they've got some seats they got to protect. And they're going to have to say, you know what, the money is better spent there than in Texas for Beto. And I think that's when he's going to start having, I'm not going to say money problems, but he's not going to have the same amount of money that he had the last time around, George.
I agree. I think that, you know, the situation is not the same as it was then. He's going to have to run, distance himself from the Biden. He's going to have to be careful with what he says and how he says it. It's not the same ball game as it was in past years. So,
that's right.
You know, I think he's going to have to be running very, very carefully this next time around.
I agree with you. He's going to need a much better effort. He's not going to be lucky this time around, I think, as he was the last time. George, before we go, it seems like every 2 weeks, maybe even sooner than that, there's an article about the media talking about Hispanics walking away from Democrats. We don't have a lot of time today. I want to talk about this at a later show when we can focus more on this topic. But it sure looks to me like the Democrats are really starting to panic, because if they don't have a strong Hispanic showing, they're in trouble, particularly in many of these competitive districts, George.
Yeah, I agree. It is a situation where, you know, they're sounding the alarm. The media is sounding the alarm. They are the canaries in the coal mine telling the Democrats, you know, you better watch out and you better do something about it. Whether they do something about it or not remains to be seen. But it'll be very, very interesting what their reaction is. I mean, they've miscalculated the Hispanic community for so long that, you know, it'll be very, very interesting to see how, you know, they react and how they respond to this situation.
Right. I agree. I think they miscalculated. They thought that all Hispanics are the same, that there's no diversity among Hispanics. And I think it's really coming back to haunt them. And I believe that over the next 10 months or so, as we do these shows, we'll be getting a lot more into that. Because at least down where you live in South Texas, on that border, that is going to be, I think, the big surprise of 2022, George. In fact, I'll go on the limb and say that I think you're going to see some massive Republican surprises down on the border in South Texas, George.
Oh, I'm hoping, and I think you're right.
Yeah, they're not going to flip every seat, but they don't have to.
No,
to have a
but it's going
to
have
a good
big
time.
Dent. There's going to be
I think
a
so.
Big dent.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I agree. No question about it. And the border policy has a lot to do with that. George, as always, thank you for your time. It's always great to chat with you. Happy New Year. And I guess we'll do a few more of these in 2022, George.
You got it. Anytime,
all right.
Buddy.
Anytime.
Have
our
a good
one. Friend, thank you very much. Happy New Year. Our good friend, George Rodriguez, down in South Texas. You know, we got a lot to look forward to, but I think this is going to be a very interesting year here in Texas, because if my senses are right and the Hispanic population begins to turn away from the Democrat Party, Texas will be very different politically, and it'll be more red state, I guess, for a longer time. I'm optimistic, but I think there's a pretty good case to be optimistic. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.